altitude's undefeated.
Crap, rainbow, punch it up, whatever it was in.
Not a huge time on it,
I don't know where I was going. I looked like I was running and started to talk to someone. I don't know what I was doing.
I tell you what, Matt, we don't get much by you, that's for sure. From you and analysis in your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. This is Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. It is Wednesday, April 19th, 2023. And my name is Matt Pollard. The Rapids got their fourth straight positive result over the weekend in the 2019 MLS Rookie of the Year Andre Shinyashiki Classico. That was kind of cool. The Stanley Cup playoffs are back, so go Avs go, or as Avs Reddit would say, hail Satan. And he who shall not be named is currently coaching the delayed USA-Mexico game as we podcast right now. Also, the new Burgundy Wave website launched and is live and no longer having errors, so you should go check that out, please. I'm joined now by a shite in knighting armor, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
Nice, well done. Good reference. I'm very much liking it. That is, for those who are not following along, a Ted Lasso reference. It is, that show is going off like a ton of bricks. It's been a lot of fun. I've been quite enjoying the move for the team. Go get some of yours, Nathan Shelley. The Wonder Kid does it again with, spoiler alert, the Greek restaurant hostess that he's been trying to get for some time, but the way he went about it was surprising to soccer fans and Romeos and Lotharios alike. I don't know what I'm saying, Matt. I'm just throwing out Greek words without any context or Shakespeare references.
This isn't a Ted Lasso podcast, Mark, but I think at some point we should banter about where we're at, because I think the episode that came out yesterday or tonight at time of recording, it's been out by the time you listen to this, listeners. I think it's episode 5 of 12, so we're not quite halfway through the season. And I think enough stuff has been brewing to where we can start talking about things. I feel like it takes the first act of every single season of Ted Lasso for them to kind of build stuff, and then it gets really good, and then obviously can get very climactic by the time we get to the penultimate and the final episode of the season. And for right now, the final episode of Ted Lasso and TBD on what spinoff things happen with the TL universe. One thing that I'm not super excited about, Mark, that I'm struggling to come up with why I should care, is this USA-Mexico cash grab cup thing that's happening tonight at time of recording. Listeners, by the time you hear this, presumably this game will have already been over. It's a USA-Mexico game, Mark. It's sponsored. I'm not going to say who the name of the sponsor is because I don't want to give any more PR to this thing because I think it's dumb. And it's not during a FIFA window, so it's B teams for both teams as well. It's USA-Mexico, so functionally I should care, Mark. If there is ever a GA Cup final that the Rapids U14s are in against RSL, I will find a way to cover that game, probably virtually. I will find a way to care about that game because functionally it's a Rocky Mountain Cup game. But other than that, it's, you know, two B teams. You know, you just mentioned before we hit the record button that Sergiño Dest is in on this team. And the only reason he is because he's not playing at Milan, so it made sense for him to be there. And on top of all this, Mark, I feel like we're in the same state of purgatory that we were like this time of the year in 2018, where the U.S. was not going to the World Cup, was going through the sporting director search. That was taking a long time, and we were just waiting for the sporting director to get appointed so the coaching search could actually properly start, so the coach could get hired, so we could move on and start thinking about qualifying for 2022. And now I feel like we're waiting for those things to happen so we can actually start focusing on roster build and then building towards 2026. Rabbi, am I a bad fan? Am I a bad member of the American soccer community? Convince me that I should care about this cash grab cuppity cup cup game against Mexico.
No, I don't disagree. I wasn't even aware that there was some sort of like sponsorship side angle. That's how out to lunch I am. I believe that Matt is referring to the Allstate Continental Classico, which, considering this is the first I've ever heard of it, shows that I'm even worse a USMNT fan than he is, and also that the advertising for it hasn't been robust, shall we say. I think the reality, Matt, is that it is okay to not care about the USMNT when they are literally as far as they possibly can be away from the next qualifying cycle, when there is not a tournament or a trophy to be interested in. They're not really anywhere near building towards even the Gold Cup, which is coming up this summer, right? There's a first Gold Cup this summer, right?
Yes, correct. So, which Denver will not be participating in. And I know there was some heat about that a couple weeks ago when it was announced, listeners. Brendan Plone over at the Post got some pretty good insight that I think there's some renovation. The scheduling didn't really work this summer between what they had scheduled and some renovation at Mile High, which was the exclusive reason for it. But yeah, to your point, Rabbi, even then, the Gold Cup probably isn't going to have Pulisic, McKenny in the group. It's going to be Anthony Hudson, trigger warning, listeners, or whoever the new head coach is figuring out, like, he's calling in a B team to figure out who's going to be my bench for 2026, which is something different to think about and have some attention towards, Mark. I just don't have that attention span right now.
Right. I mean, for me, my attention span right now can only go towards the women's team. And even then, the women's team, you know, the challenge of the men's team and the challenge of the women's team is almost yin and yang, right? The challenge of the men's team is, why should I care about this team until the World Cup, at which point all we can hope for is that they survive out of the group stage so they can get knocked out of the quarterfinals, right? The expectations on the women's team are the exact opposite, which is I shouldn't even get excited about the opening group stage because I expect the women's team to just coast all the way into the final, and then I'm going to really care about it. Now, that being said, you should watch as many of the women's team games as possible. I'll definitely be hosting a watch party at my house at some point for the matches. But, you know, like, I don't think I'll be hosting a watch party for their opener in the World Cup down in Australia and New Zealand, where they play against Vietnam. The second match will be against Netherlands, and the third one will be against Portugal. So they should cruise through all those games and dismantle every one of those teams. In fact, I feel sad for the Vietnamese women's football team because we're going to do terrible things to them. But that's where my head is at, right? Which is like, I'm all in for the women's team, and I'm excited to see, you know, who makes the final squad, and how much turnover they have from past years and who some of the younger players are. So, this team, me and Matt looked at the lineup. It's not quite Camp Cupcake. There's a lot of really good players there who are regulars. But there's a bunch of guys who've been brought in who I was surprised that they brought in, and I didn't expect to be on that team, and I don't know that we'll see in 4 years or 3 years on the team, but you never know. And if you're a diehard, then you're listening to, you probably clicked the swoopy 30 second button on this podcast to skip past me and Matt talking smack about the unimportance and irrelevance of U.S. men's soccer right now, because you're all in, baby, on this team. And that's okay. Me and Matt, far be it for either of the two of us to look down our noses at someone who wants to watch a football match. Matt and I have watched a tremendous number of irrelevant football matches in our soccer viewing career. Me, I think probably primarily late season September Rapids games when there was absolutely nothing to contest. And that mixed with this current season, my favorite thing to do is, because it matches up time-wise with when I'm able to view, I watch a lot of Serie A, and I'm often watching like teams that are not that important or relevant right now in the grand scheme of things, because what the heck, man? Juventus had a huge point deduction, and so they're like distantly down and fourth, and there's no hope for them to come back. And man, I will tune in to watch Juventus any day because they are fun to watch.
Nothing else that I have to say on this, Mark. Shall we move on?
Yeah, no, I mean, we could run down the players on this lineup, but like I said, like, I, you know, there's a bunch of guys who we expect to be there, then a bunch of guys who, you know, are kind of like just outside of the fold, and it doesn't mean anything, and it might not mean anything until we see them get selected again in the Gold Cup. So we'll save our thoughts till June, and then we'll look at Gold Cup selection and say, like, oh, Brandon Vasquez, I wonder if that means something.
Yeah, I think one thing to maybe get excited about from a Gold Cup standpoint, Mark, from a Rapids perspective, is you have to think that one of the serious positions they're going to be looking at backups or alternatives to Jedi Robinson on the left, that Sam Vines presumably will be back and fully healed from his, I think he broke his leg last fall, Mark, am I remembering that correctly? So yep. Presumably he'll be back and want to do something in the summer to get fitness to then roll that into, you know, getting back into the starting lineup with Royal Antwerp as they look to be competitive in Belgium and hopefully qualifying for one of the European competitions as well. And you have to think, if Anthony Hudson is still the interim head coach, that there'd be some level of favoritism, fairly or unfairly, towards Sam getting in on that. So, Mark, what I care about, I would be much more inclined to care about the Gold Cup with a B team if there was a Rapids-related player or something, or some other interesting narrative on this. But if it's just a bunch of guys that are competing for who's going to be the bench in 2026, it's harder for me to get excited. I could tell you right now who 7, possibly 8 starters are going to be for that first game in 2026 just off the top of my head. Listeners, this past Saturday at Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte, North Carolina, the Colorado Rapids played themselves to a 2-2 draw with Charlotte FC. Bit of some chopping and changing in the lineup again from Robin Fraser. I had reported, Mark, we found out early last week that Andreas Maxu had, in fact, been concussed in the game against Sporting Kansas City. He was doing some training stuff, not a whole lot. Effectively, the soccer equivalent of the red no-contact jerseys that you would see for an American football quarterback, or certainly a player coming back from injury in hockey. So he was out of the lineup. Brian Galvan also hurt as well. So it was a back three of Wilson, Lawless, and Keegan Rosenberry. Sam Nicholson and Beta operating as the wingbacks. And then in the midfield, you had once again Connor Ronan and Brian Acosta. William Yarbrough was again starting in goal and wearing the captain's armband. Marco Iliche still waiting for his first start for the Colorado Rapids. Burgundy Wave patrons, you can head on over to our Patreon page if you want to hear the interview I had with Marco this past week. And then up top, Mark, it would have been Cole Bassett and Diego Rubio, with Darren Yapi in front of them as well. Not a whole lot to say about the first half, to be honest. I thought the Rapids did a really good job of killing the game and preventing Charlotte from having whatever momentum they were going to have, given what we talked about last week with them coming out with intensity. It was a lot of intensity, not a lot of execution or purpose. First big action of note would have been in the 30th minute when Cole Bassett went down and got hurt. And we got it confirmed after the game, Mark, that he re-injured the hamstring that had kept him out of the previous two games. So kind of a rough start for Cole Bassett after opening his 2023 account against Minnesota. Max comes in for him. And maybe the one big chance the Rapids had was a set piece in stoppage time of the first half. Lawless Abubakar getting onto a redirect and putting the ball into the mixer. But Mark's able to get to it, the goalkeeper for Charlotte. The Rapids open the scoring about 10 minutes into the first half. Diego Rubio winning a ball in midfield and then sending it through to play Sam Nicholson into space, who squares it to Max, who's able to tap it in. And the Rapids have a 1-0 lead on the road. And then 2 goals in 3 minutes for the home side. First, Vargas scoring on a shot from the top of the box, well picking out the bottom right-hand corner on William Yarbrough. And kind of a defensive breakdown, Mark, given it's the first goal that we've really seen this season where the Rapids are in a good position and the opponent just kind of is able to pass and walk through the middle of their defense. Brian Acosta kind of gets pulled out of position, doesn't really get his man. Danny Wilson has to step to it. He doesn't get to it. And then Lawless is slow to react on the shooter as well. Some decent passing from Charlotte, some poor marking and anticipation from the Colorado Rapids, who were Swiss cheese defensively on that play. And then 3 minutes later, Joe Wiziak, J O with an apostrophe with an accent, Z W I A K. Mark,
I think it's Joswiak. That's my take.
Rabbi, why are there so many Polish players in Charlotte? Like, I feel like the Polish market would be much more of a Minnesota, Chicago kind of a thing.
There are a lot of Polish players in Chicago, but for some reason they just decided that the good players are the good Polish players should all go to Charlotte, which I don't understand. I did not know that pierogi and sausage was a big thing in North Carolina, but maybe it is. I don't know.
All right. Well, when Pittsburgh, when the Riverhounds finally go to MLS, their first DP can be from Poland, and he can head on over.
We don't have any Polish players, and we never have in my time here. It's mystifying.
In any case, Mark, so that guy scores to make it 2-1 in favor of Charlotte. A really nice pass into the gap to Swinderski, who ultimately sets up for the goal. Lawless has to follow him, and then a similar play where a really good pass to a player in space who makes a really good move pulls one player out of shape, and then it all just kind of frazzles away as the Rapids aren't able to react to the loss of that structure and being pulled open by the passing and the movement of Charlotte attackers off the ball. Danny Wilson was kind of in position. Sam Nicholson was the one, directly would have been marked 1v1 against the attacker, and isn't able to win that header. And that's not the first time, Mark, we've seen Nicholson in a position 1v1 defensively to try and prevent a really good scoring opportunity, and the opponent is able to do a really good job. I think Sam's done a lot of really good things in a position that in certain ways suits him, but ultimately, the one weakness you would have in that situation would be he's not a fullback defensively. He's not Keegan Rosenberry. He's not Mark Birch. And when you put him in those positions, other slightly above average attackers in MLS are able to take advantage. But the Rapids are ultimately able to respond after that, with about 25 minutes left to try and get an equalizer. The aforementioned Sam Nicholson got a couple opportunities. Brian Acosta with some chances from distance, including a shot from outside the box that hit the near side post. And then in the 90th minute plus one, it was once again Diego Rubio getting the ball in midfield, having a moment to pick his head up, sees an attacking player making a run, and then pings a well-placed pass. Marks is able to get to the ball before the substitute, Michael Barrios, but an absolute howler from the goalkeeper, fumbling the ball, and then Barrios is there to tap it in for the open chance. And the Rapids get out of Dodge. Four results in a row, Mark. Three draws and one win, and a result that I think there are many positives to take from. Rabbi, I will start with you. Good things from this past Saturday's 2-2 draw in the Carolinas.
I'll say two good things, I suppose. One, I thought Sam Nicholson and Diego Rubio, but mostly specifically Sam Nicholson, had a really good game. The open play that Diego Rubio played to get Nicholson into space that he dribbled in at just the right angle and then fed the ball at the perfect time to Max for that first goal in the 54th minute was just really lovely. And, the thing about Sam Nicholson up till now is that he's been an energizer bunny on the left side creating chaos, but his finishing and his precision, also his ability to settle the ball, has been lackluster, shall we say. And that ability was just really great. The other thing was that Charlotte is a good team, and the Rapids played with them. I mean, I thought every minute of this game, Colorado looked equal to Charlotte. I don't think there was ever a moment where I felt like we were outclassed or we were out-talented. And I think that that's one of those criticisms that we might, could, should levy at the Rapids this year, that they're just not as, they've been in 14th for a good chunk of the season. They've been in 11th or 10th for a good chunk of the season. That ultimately means that, by definition, they're not as good as the rest of the Western Conference. They look, mostly the last four games that you've mentioned, Matt, as good as their opponents. They looked as good as Sporting Kansas City. They looked as good as Austin, at least for most of the game. They definitely looked as good as Charlotte. And I thought Charlotte looked fairly talented. I also liked the way they matched up against Charlotte. Charlotte kind of positionally spread the field a little bit more than some of their other opponents, and the Rapids matched up fairly well. The only obvious exceptions to that, which I'll talk about in a bad thing, are defensively. But, overall, a fairly complete performance, additionally, a good one on the road, and the Rapids continue to get good results on the road after a season in which they were terrible on the road. So that's a lot of good things. How about you, Matt?
I want to start with Diego Rubio, Mark, who for me, I don't know if he, let me check the box score just to make sure. I don't believe he technically was awarded an assist on that one from Michael Barrios, because if it touches a defender in the way that counts as a new play, quote unquote, he does not. So he gets the hockey assist, the secondary assist on the Max goal in the 54th minute, Nicholson getting the primary assist. But effectively, Rubio continues to be the conduit upon which all of the offense goes through. To your point, Rabbi, about Sam Nicholson, he's increasingly becoming, he's doing well what Lucas Estevez and before him Sam Vines did really well, that at times was necessary for the attack, where the Rapids had the defensive structure and they were just trying to find ways to disorganize the opponent and moving forward into good attacking positions. And Nicholson's movement on that left flank in terms of being able to break lines, find space, and then have passing players, a Connor Ronan, a Danny Wilson, a William Yarbrough, find him in that space has catalyzed the attack. We saw Lucas Estevez, that was maybe his one really good trait that he certainly had for the Colorado Rapids. I'm not quite calling, you know, the Sam the Scottish Vines back yet. There's a lot of other things that he has to do really, really well that he has not done yet as well or as consistently as Sam Vines was doing, Mark, in, you know, say 2021, certainly. But, you know, it's something, that's something that I've seen that's a positive. But still, reliably, whether Diego Rubio's in a more attacking role or in a withdrawn role, he continues to be extremely effective in disrupting the opponent when they try to play out at the back. And when he's able to get the ball either in transition or with people around him or anything, he is able to make stuff happen from an attacking standpoint. You know, it was him almost all on his own, save for one run from Michael Barrios at Sporting Kansas City the other week, you know, to create the shooting lane for him to score. And he gets the ball. And, you know, he's, that's not a dangerous position that he got on either situation, you know, have you. You know, there's a defender around him. They have numbers back and everything. It's one guy open and you have to ping a really, really good 30-yard ball. And if that's not off or if the player has to run it down, then it's not really a dangerous situation. And he pings those perfectly, basically picking his head up, looking, seeing the player, and then 1 second later releasing, perfect timing, perfect placement, and then perfect execution by those players who ultimately end up receiving the ball. You know, it's what, I think it was 4 goals last week, Mark. So we're talking about 6 goals now. And effectively, all of them have been in transition. I'll say now, we finally have a goal that's involving three players, a three-player sequence on the first one, with Rubio to Sam to Max ultimately. Great job by Max getting his first MLS goal, I believe, as well. Rabbi, so congrats to him. And for him to do that on top of what I think has been gradually improving performances in a more natural role for him. If you look at how he played in Brazil, he was in a midfield role, but then he normally went out wide. And he kind of has that freedom in the 3-4-2-1 structure where he can come in centrally, be part of the midfield properly, be an 8, be box-to-box. But also he has the freedom to spread out wide and then do stuff as well when he receives the ball in space. So that was a nice play by him. And I think that that goal was emblematic or deserved and earned in that he's had gradual improvement. I've seen it in training. We've obviously seen it with a number of, you know, performances and game time that he's gotten as well. So that was good. But still, so much of this offense is just reliant on getting the ball to Diego Rubio and then Diego Rubio executing to put other people into position to do that. It wasn't like Sam Nicholson got the ball, you know, on a 2-yard pass from Rubio and then dribbled through three defenders in order to get somebody. And so that's still something that I have a concern about this team and still has this team's ceiling relatively low and well-defined. They're too reliant on Diego Rubio. I can now say, Mark, I feel like we have a reliable supporting cast around that. Max has gotten a goal. Kolbas has gotten a goal. Darren Yapi's still getting chances. Eventually, he's going to score one of those. Eventually, this team's finally going to get a chance on a set piece. Danny Wilson and Lalas Abubakar and, you know, Max Schu prior to his concussion have gotten opportunities. But, you know, that's still something that I'm thinking about with this team. And then my last good thing I have before we go to bad things, Rabbi, is I really liked the response after going down. You look at that point, I feel like Charlotte was very conservative, and I thought the Rapids really controlled the final 20 minutes. And I haven't always been able to say that when the Rapids are chasing a result in those final 20 minutes. You know, maybe I could say that about certainly the Austin draw. I don't know that I could say that about the final 20 minutes against Minnesota when once Minnesota took the lead on that set piece opportunity. So to really kind of have the urgency, but then also the execution and maybe take advantage of the nerves and the situational, you know, what Charlotte was going through, thinking like, oh my God, we have a lead on the road. We have a lead at home and we've got a really big crowd and we need to cash this in because we've been so poor and everything. We have to do this and to take advantage of the psychological moment, the tactical moment and the situation and ultimately execute on the opportunities to get a result, I thought was another really nice step in the right direction for the Rapids. Still have a lot of work to do. Still need to win a game at home. Rabbi, bad thing.
Well, so the most obvious thing about the bad things is that the marking on the first goal that Charlotte poured in was not good. They really just kind of lost the plot there in a way that was a bit surprising. It was a Kerwin Vargas goal in the 62nd minute, I believe. And if you go back and you look at the tape, like I have a couple times because I'm a sicko, when the Rapids kind of receive when the initial kind of press by three players by Charlotte happens, the Rapids are all kind of marked up and in a straight line. And as the ball gets deflected across the line, you kind of see all four of the players, five of the players across that back line caught ball watching. As the Charlotte players start to move positions to adjust to the fact that the ball has passed and moved across the line, you know, from a deflection by Lalas Abubakar, but also even before that from the pass, there's just a lot of guys who are either stopped, not marking their guy, they're in too much space, or they've let other players kind of continue moving past them. The second goal is less problematic. There's not good marking on the front post for the pass or on the back post, but the back post is being marked by Sam Nicholson, and Sam's not really, like, that's not naturally his most ideal position. So the Rapids have been a little bit discombobulated in a way that's somewhat believable. You know, it takes two to tango in that case, where the guy on the pass needs to have just enough space to make the pass, and he does. And the guy, he needs to pick out the one player who's breaking loose, and that in Joswiak's case was Joswiak, and he's getting past Sam Nicholson. I'm less condemning of that second goal, but the Rapids need to do better on critical moments where they're really caught in between. They defend better than that typically, but this was just a weird little situation where they just kind of fell apart all at once. I suppose that's my biggest negative. I didn't really get to say two other good things that I said, which is pretty weird. All you can say about this game on some level is that I will say another bad thing. So I have one more good thing and one more bad thing because I'm totally out of sorts, Matt, because I'm a hot mess. That's just how it is. Which is the other good thing is Brian Acosta really had some really nice shots in this game. He really tested the goalkeeper in a lot of ways for Charlotte. And there was a lot of testing of the goalkeeper. I mean, Michael Barrios had a really great chance, almost identical to the one that he scored on just a few minutes earlier in like the 84th minute, where he ran in behind and there was a good save on it. But, you know, like the Rapids created a lot of chances in the second half, and Acosta lashed some, and there was a great chance that got popped across the line by Lalas Abubakar and nearly got finished by Danny Wilson. And there's just a lot of good in this game. The other thing I'll say that is a bad thing is the opposite reaction, the opposite comment of the thing that I said regarding how we played up to Charlotte. I don't think Charlotte is that strong overall an MLS team. I don't think SKC has proven to be at all a strong team. And those two games looked very similar to me in that we matched up very closely to those opponents. To that degree, I feel like we play down a little bit to MLS opponents. We never look like we overpower anyone. We're just kind of wrestling with and playing at the level of our opponents. We don't outclass anybody. And that means that when you're going toe-to-toe and really wrestling and struggling with the weaker teams in MLS, it kind of implies you're one of the weaker teams in MLS yourself, right? If we've had a hard time getting past Sporting Kansas City this year, and Sporting Kansas City are, I believe, at the bottom of the table right now. Let me just double check that to be sure. Yep, they're dead last on 3 points with a -9 goal differential. Charlotte is, you know, theoretically a stronger team in that they have 6 points and a -7 goal differential, but they're in 14th in the Eastern Conference. So we got a draw against the last team in the Western Conference. We got a draw against the second to last team in the Eastern Conference, right? These are the teams you kind of have to beat in order to rise out of the bottom of the league. And that's where we're at right now. And it doesn't get easier in the next coming weeks, shall we say. Matt, what's your bad thing?
Yeah, I similarly had the same thoughts about the defensive breakdowns. I thought you covered it well, and I covered my thoughts on those plays and what went wrong and why it was concerning during the rundown, so I don't have to say anything else about that. And Mark, just the injury bug continues to plague the Colorado Rapids here and there. You know, was really excited to see Bassett back in the starting lineup, and okay, is he back? Is he 90 minutes fit? Is he going to get 60 minutes, and then maybe Max gets a run out, depending on the state of the game, or maybe Jonathan Lewis comes in for him, example, since Johnny was on the bench, and 30 minutes in, he re-injures the same hamstring that was giving him trouble. And you know, Mark, we've covered this game for a long enough to know that, you know, hamstrings are one of those things where, you know, it can come back and it can haunt you all season. You a little niggle can, you know, can become a nagging injury. And one little thing where, you know, you're thinking where a player's listed as questionable or day to day for 2 to 3 weeks could start, you know, could instantly derail your entire season. And given how I think Cole was playing prior to his injury and given how important he was going to be to the midfield with Jack Price's injury in the second home game of the season as well, just to not have him available is still troubling. I wasn't super surprised that Max Schuh wasn't cleared as well. Just seeing what I was seeing in training, it was good that he was out there. It's good that he was doing ball drills. But as soon as he wasn't involved in any real physical activity, no contact drills and nothing where he was going to have to, you know, deal with a ball above his shoulders, I'm not surprised that he wasn't there. I thought Rosenberry was fine in that role. I'm still concerned, Mark, that every single time that Robin prefers to play with three center backs and given how much I've heard and how much I've seen about how Buba's making progress, Bombito looked good in preseason, Mike Edwards is back and with the team from his loan from Charlotte and everything, you know, all this stuff about the young center backs, and there's got to be one viable future MLS starter in there, and still Frazier is going with, you know, a guy slightly out of position, almost 30 from a passing standpoint. You know, even given his height or maybe the lack of physicality you would get from a Max Schuh, the meat truck that is Lalas Abubakar, or the Scottish Salmon. That's not something I'm concerned about. It's not a negative. It's not yet like a criticism. I'm not ready to say that, you know, Robin Frazier has abandoned the Rap Kids or anything, but it's something I've thought about multiple times. And as long as they're going to have injuries with Max Schuh out with the head injury, Bombito still out with his MCL, Brian Galvan, who's been questionable for like 3 weeks straight with his groin injury, and now Bassett re-injuring his hamstring, it still bears, I think, valid questions, Rabbi. What's going on with either the pitch conditions, what they're doing in training, or the training staff to where they continue to get injuries in volume, and injuries are taking longer to recover than one would typically expect. That's still an outstanding question that I'm curious about, and I need more data and insight on. Move on to big things, Mark. You know, as I said earlier, four straight results. I still think it's moving in the right direction. I think your points about how this is a game that a team trying to work their way into the playoffs should expect to win. I'm acknowledging that I'm viewing this from a positive standpoint of they're building towards positive results, and in theory, this leads to them going on a good run. Hopefully, that starts with a win at home against St. Louis. Three straight games now, Mark, that we've seen with Lalas Abubakar playing amid Rabadan, with the rule then allowing him to break his fast as well. I will have a piece on Burgundy Wave on Thursday morning about that. Spoke to Lalas, really, really good interview last week, folks. It'll probably be up by the time you're listening to this, potentially. And to your point, Rabbi, about kind of the duality of the Brian Acosta performance from, I think, being solid but conservative in the first half. Obviously at fault, I think he was the most at fault player on the first Charlotte goal, and then, you know, nearly to rectifying himself with the goal himself. Brian Acosta's almost in the Colin Warner position last year, where they don't have anybody else that can consistently do most of the things that he's able to do good, but he needs to not make mistakes, occasionally do something really well that has a big impact on the team, and then just be consistent. And if he can do that, the Rapids can plug enough holes elsewhere in the midfield. I can't remember if this was an Ask HTHL or if somebody asked me this separately, Mark, but I got a question recently about if Price came back and other players were playing well, would Price be out of the starting lineup? And I don't think that's possible. I think Brian Acosta has a very low ceiling and a very high floor in terms of what he is in MLS. I don't think everybody being healthy on this team and informed that he's a starter, but somebody else needs to step up. Maybe that's Max in Cole Bassett's role, but I don't know that we've seen enough from Ralph Prizzo to warrant him getting more game time than he has gotten. We're still waiting for Brian Galvan to get back. Ollie LaRoz is doing good stuff with Rapids 2, but it's Rapids 2. I continue to have concerns about what this midfield is going to be able to do against good teams in difficult situations, Rabbi. I think Connor Ronan's fantastic. If Acosta can be consistent and not get dumb second yellows, I think they'll be okay. What happens in that third position if Cole Bassett's hamstring becomes more problematic in long term is a really good question that Robin Fraser needs to find a good answer to. Rabbi, any other big things or shall we move on?
I guess my big thing is just to pimp my own work with regard to your mentioning of the depth problems and the injury problems. Last week's back pass was about it was called depth perception. It is talking about the Rapids' issues regarding depth. And I also think it was a fun thing to bring back in relation to Matt getting to reboot Burgundy Wave this week, because I got to bring back an old school Burgundy Wave favorite that almost nobody remembers, because if you've been following the Rapids and Burgundy Wave for that long, you are truly Sickos FC, deep in the weeds. I mean, you're so far back, you're like Sickos Wednesday. You're like Sickos Wanderers, right? You're Sickos City. Anyways, I don't even know what that means. We brought back something called the Scott Palguda Depth Meter. Scott Palguda, as I'm sure all of you remember, was a fairly obscure, deep player for the Colorado Rapids in 2010, 2011, and 2012. Chris White, the OG original editor, managing editor of Burgundy Wave, created the Palguda depth meter in order to gauge how bad things were with the Colorado Rapids in terms of injuries. One Palguda, you're deep at that position. Four Palgudas means danger, Will Robinson. You have to panic and worry. So, yeah, with what everything that Max said, Matt said is true. Andreas Max Shoes injury, Cole Bassett pulling up lame with a hamstring injury again. Those were worrisome. There's problems at midfield with depth. There's a little bit of problem at center back with depth. We don't really want to go down those roads if we can avoid it. So that's a little bit about, that's all I want to add to that conversation. With that, Matt, should I tell them about how to support this podcast?
Of course. We love money, Mark, and we love getting beer.
Holding the Highline is a reader-supported publication. We do this out of love, but website hosting and buying gas to go to training ain't free. If you value what we do, consider becoming a paid subscriber. At just $42 a year or $5 a month, it's the price of a Frappuccino. You can afford it. A yearly subscription will get you some discounted or free merch from us this year, a beer mug or stein, design pending, and some behind. And in fact, folks, I actually went and started to do a little designitude myself and looking at maybe a beer mug or a pint glass that might sport our logo or some kind of cool logo on it. And we're just going to send that out to our $42 or $5 a month level supporters, or we'll sell it straight up for those of you who just want the stein, but don't want all of the other frills that are attached to it. But anyways, it also will give you behind the paywall articles and some audio and some other cool stuff. You'll be supporting citizen soccer journalism, and we appreciate it. Last thing, Matt, speaking of citizen soccer journalism, guess who Holding the Highline and Burgundy Wave are co-sponsoring, not financially, but in spirit alone, to go off to cover the U.S. Women's National Team matches this summer?
Our very own intrepid beat photog, John Babiak, Mark.
John Babiak is going down under, ladies and gentlemen. He's headed to the Land of the Hobbits and Megan Rapinoe. New Zealand and Australia to go catch some U.S. women's soccer. I think it's okay to say this on air, he has a credential to cover the U.S. women's national team at the World Cup. I believe, Matt, it's his first World Cup as a credentialed media member. He has covered some really cool matches. He covered, if you don't know this, folks, this gives me and Matt street cred just by knowing this dude. He covered Cuerva. He was at the US MNT disaster in Trinidad when we went out in late October of 2017. He has covered Serie A football matches. He has covered the NFL. I believe he's also covered international soccer, basically everywhere in the United States that people go to watch the US MNT. He's been at Columbus. He's covered games in Miami. I think he picked up a game in Dallas and another one in Atlanta a couple of years ago. Man is everywhere. And he's ours. He's one of our own. He's one of our own. John Babiak, the photographer. He's one of our own. So anyways, we appreciate his work and sending us photos. Matt, I see the new Burgundy Wave is going to be mostly sporting his work. And God willing, when I get going, he'll support your work too. And if we can get enough money from this podcast, from you intrepid listeners, to help out, I could buy a brand new lens for my camera. My autofocus lens at 200 millimeters basically doesn't work anytime if a player is moving more than 5 miles an hour or the light isn't perfectly right. So someday I'd like to upgrade that. Those little things basically take all the money that you guys give us and we spend it on soccer so that we can bring you better coverage. And that's 100% what we do. And occasionally we drink a beer.
One interesting thing from an inside baseball standpoint, Mark, that now that I'm no longer beholden to certain people at a certain media outlet, that I can now say John often got a lot of opportunities because of connections that we had in with SB Nation and just like the size of the outlet rather than the size of Burgundy Wave or the it was reflective of the macro organization, the parent organization, not necessarily reflective of the size of the audience that Burgundy Wave had at the time. And so John's got a lot of opportunities because he's put in for SB Nation and it's a large of enough site that, you know, it can have multiple credentials. And he's kind of built a reputation within, I'd say, American soccer in general, but specifically with the national teams, mostly with the women more so than the men, to be fair, where they see his name and with SB Nation as well, and they have that. And credit to that relationship and obviously the working relationship that I now have with the longstanding comms team over at the U.S. national team, where they also semi-recognize my name because they have a similar view on Last Word on Sports as well, that they saw that. And even without the Vox and the SB Nation entity as well, the fact that was someone and an outlet that they were willing to sponsor, given the work that John's done and given the certainly the niche market. I think it's one thing, Mark, if you're adding a, you know, I don't know how many people are going to be covering the women's national team, but, you know, I have to imagine it was close to, I don't know, was it 100? Was it 50? Something like that of just the regular beat writers that you had following the United States men's national team at Qatar. And I imagine it could be something similar, maybe much larger, for going down to New Zealand and to Australia. And I don't think that the marginal value, Mark, of adding the nth plus one, somebody who's going to write the same thing with the exact same quotes, with the exact same availability from the exact same players, is useful at a smaller scale when ESPN, CBS, The Athletic, et cetera, are all going to be covering it for the U.S., to say nothing of obviously the international coverage that the two-time defending World Cup champions are going to garner in that regard. But the fact that you have somebody there going with a specific niche, covering specific players and focused on that, I think is a niche that certainly has value. And, you know, barring the health of Mallory Swanson, I think there's going to be a lot of very Colorado-specific stuff that's certainly going to be interesting. And if that just means that Lindsey Horan has to do media availability so that John can ask one specific coverage and he can point out again where in Colorado she's from exactly, we know that's going to get clicks, Mark, because Colorado people love Colorado natives, particularly for when they're playing for the national team. So happy about that. Anything else on the ad remark, or shall we move on to the news dumps that the Rapids have been putting out since this past Friday?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have to talk about it because I think a lot of Rapids fans are going to read this and go, what? And not really know what's going on. So Matt, drop some knowledge and educates our peoples.
So listeners, late last week, the Rapids started what was one of four really big press release dumps on changing the org chart, changing a bunch of people's titles, promoting some people, and then adding new staff, particularly on the technical side of the club. That started last week, where Porrick Smith was officially named president of the Colorado Rapids. His previous role was executive vice president and general manager. Mark, I made a joke with a club official that I'm so glad that I now no longer have to re-Google what Porrick's title is, so that when I have to write it, I don't get it wrong, because now it's just president. This is the first time the Rapids have had a president since July of 2017, when Tim Hinchey left for USA Swimming, USA Olympics, one of those two. So Porrick is now the president. I know some people were kind of poo-pooing this, Rabbi, but I kind of thought, like, this kind of made sense, and how much of this is just changing titles to reflect the structure that's really been in place for the longest period of time. You know, Porrick's been executive VP since pre-COVID as well, so effectively, he's been the highest level executive for the club since before COVID. He's effectively been acting president without the title of president. And then you have also Wayne Brandt is now the chief business officer. His previous position was senior vice president of business operations. I think that's correct. And then in the news dump earlier today, Mark, Fran Taylor's been officially appointed the sporting director. He was previously the assistant general manager. There's now not officially a general manager position. Crudely marking the org chart, sporting director, technical director, general manager, usually the same thing across world football. And then Ruth Faya has been F-A-H-Y. Ruth, if I'm mispronouncing your name, somebody at the club, feel free to correct me, is the vice president of club administration and compliance. There was another person in that role before that. And then, Mark, there was the, I think you spoke to her, I can't remember her name, the Indian woman who went to USC, who we found out. We both asked this question of how does the club actually submit when they want to trade, and she said it's actually a fax machine because there's a form, and it's the easiest technology that can't be hackable. It's a fax machine. I can't remember this person's name. She's now in
any case. I cannot either, but she's not there. She hasn't been there in years, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, so Ruth is now in that role. She'll be doing some administrative stuff around technical side of what the club is doing, and then also working in on compliance. That's a very important role, as I'll get to in a minute, Mark. I know a lot of Rapids fans are kind of up in arms about the current stuff. If you've been paying any close attention to the Klein out situation with the LA Galaxy, particularly as it relates to compliance, the Rapids having someone on payroll whose specific job is to make sure they're compliant is a pretty important position.
Yeah.
And then in addition to this, Mark, they've added and changed some of the titles. Chris Zitterbart, who we've had on the podcast, is now officially the director of scouting. They've hired in somebody on to be the director of sporting operations and brand management, who had previous experience at CU and in the Olympics. They've hired more people on the data side as well. And then also I heard from I spoke to a club source, Mark, who said that the really big story here wasn't, and I agree with this, to be clear, I had this thought independently. I asked this person who shall go nameless, and then they agreed with me. The story for me, Mark, here isn't the slight changing of the org chart at the top of the pyramid. It's that the club is actually building out the base and the foundation of the pyramid. So, I mean, they're adding new scouting people. They're expanding the analytics department. They've added a bunch of people on the technical side. They've also hired, Mark, Andre Hilth, who is the club language specialist and team operations coordinator. Despite all the good things, Rabbi, that have been said about Max's improving English, the fact that the club is trying to be international, bringing in players who don't necessarily speak the language, the fact that they have someone whose official title is club language specialist on top of what Brian Reed's doing from a player welfare standpoint, there's so much more stuff that even if Fran Taylor is still acting secondarily to Porrick Smith being the technical brain trust of the club and everything, they have so many more minions to do so much more data analysis, look at so many things, overlook stuff as well. To where I have to think the next U22 initiative player who they drop six figures on to bring in from South America, there's going to be so much more legwork to make sure that that's the right player for them. And there's a lot more stuff, a lot more tools, and a lot more people to make sure that player succeeds upon their arrival. And then the last news dump that you had, Mark, as well, was the club announcing additions and promotions to the business staff. A lot of that stuff was on the media side, folks. So I have to imagine that was maybe not a mandate, but a good thing to do, given everything that was happening from an Apple TV and a content production standpoint. And then also some people being brought in or elevated within the club who are going to handle things on the marketing side. So in the same way, Rabbi, where I mentioned that now Fran Taylor and Porrick Smith have an expanded scouting network and expanding analytics department, Wayne Brandt now has, you know, a new group of people that can help out with what they're doing, including somebody with a extensive experience on the AV side from a marketing standpoint as well. And that will increasingly become important as the club tries to, you know, leverage the the new financial opportunities they have with Apple TV, with sponsorship within the market nationally or internationally, and certainly the shirt sponsorship now with UC Health. Rabbi, so I've mentioned where I think the actual story is, which is now there's way more staff to support the technical side, to where now they have the infrastructure and the vision of what Porrick wanted to do with the Rapids Way, what Fran Taylor has been increasingly involved with on the technical side, and now they're actually building out a proper support network to support and execute on that vision. So again, for me, still the big story isn't what's happening at the top of the org chart, it's what's happening at the base and the built out of the org chart. I have seen, going back to last week, a lot of banter from the Rapids community who see this as the Rapids doubling down on a process that we know is inconsistent or that isn't going to actually have them win MLS Cup, or that Porrick has been insufficient as a GM because the Rapids are not yet a perennial playoff team. We've seen that, you know, that's been said a dozen times to me by Porrick when I've asked him on the record, and he brings up the quote from the Rapids Way: we want to be a perennial playoff team, we want to bring a second MLS Cup back to Colorado. And fans looking at this as they got a bunch of new money because they finally have a shirt sponsorship, you know, they got however many X millions of dollars from the Apple TV deal, and the club on some level is using that to the people at the top are using that to give themselves new titles, a promotion, and a pay raise and a pat on the back for what some fans consider mediocre or still failure from a work side. And I think there's a valid question how much that money is promoting people who are doing the same job, and this title is maybe a change in how much money they are being compensated, but not necessarily a change in the day-to-day. Rabbi, is there validity to this, or should you and I be interviewing the new analytics people about what they're doing to try and truly quantify the good things that Brian Galvan could be doing for the team?
I don't know. You know, wait and see is definitely a thing. I think I want to hedge my bets against just buying the club's narrative hook, line, and sinker, because we've been bit by that before. This is a team that was operating some years very bare bones. I actually think your point about the bottom of the roster, which the bottom of the front office, which I think is an excellent point, was one that I would not have noticed. And I called my attention to one of the several press releases the Rapids made. And the second to last paragraph is really indicative of what you said. In addition to Del Valle and Brown, the Rapids also added 9 new roles to their business staff this season: broadcast manager, managing editor, marketing manager, marketing, Rapids 2 marketing and events manager, yada, 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 yada. But kind of filling out the back end of the roster is a really great thing, I think, to note here, Matt, that like in the past, the video team has been a little spare and the communications team has been missing some folks and so on. So the other thing I want to call out, just because I've done the work on it in the past, and it encourages you to maybe go diving for this article, which I've reposted on Twitter for those who follow me on Twitter. If you want to know a little bit more about Fran Taylor and what he brings to the table, I wrote about him, my God, I'm getting old, Matt, 5 years ago when I wrote for American Soccer Analysis. It was probably, this was funny, Matt, and explained why I don't write for them anymore. It was the first, last, and only assistant general manager profile for American Soccer Analysis. They're just a bunch of math geeks, and they had never really profiled a player before. A analytics and general manager kind of player management person before. And so talking to Fran for a while was really, really great. And he has a fantastic backstory. He's an interesting guy. I would love to get him back on the podcast. The only problem is there's a reason Matt and I don't often interview Porrick for the podcast, which is Porrick is great. He's a really interesting guy. If you can have a beer with him and talk off the record. He's a blast to talk to. Once you get Porrick Smith on the record, he's very, very formal, and he doesn't tell you much. Which is fine. It's totally understandable.
Yes, which on some level, Mark, I want my presidents to be boring and then say and then not say the quiet part out loud. So, you know, valid.
That's right.
You know, valid point. But, you know, to your point, Mark, there's a reason. There's certain players and certain people that we go to because they'll actually want to have a conversation. So.
Right. We want to interview Sam Nicholson so that when we ask him about the dribble in on the box, he could say, I don't know where I was going, if I'm honest. Like, that's absolutely gold content. But getting Porrick Smith to say the thing that he said in the press release out loud over again on the podcast, not compelling content. And Fran Taylor's very much the same way. The article I did with him was fantastic because he did disclose a lot. But the whole joke in the article is basically saying, like, the one that I did 5 years ago on him was, I asked him a lot of questions and he told me a lot of stuff. But if the ultimate question was, what's the secret sauce that creates the advanced metric that you guys use to judge players, he was basically like, ha, 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 I can't tell you. You know, like that. And that's okay. I understand it, but doesn't make for the world's greatest article. So anyways, go read that article, though, because he is actually a lot of fun to talk to. And his backstory is really compelling. So I generally think, though, that these moves, I think your intuition, Matt, might be right, that the new titles might be the result of finally paying some of the front office staff a little bit more to retain them and show them their value after a few lean years with the Rapids. The other last thing I'll say before we move on to kind of wrap this show up is this is the fans are somewhat critical. And your point about the LA Galaxy and the Chris Klein out movement is relevant. Fans are somewhat critical of the Rapids for good reason, which is to say, what, the general manager and the president all gave themselves fancy new titles and pay raises, even though they haven't won MLS Cup since 2010? What is that BS all about? And the answer is yes, and this is a team that has been playing Moneyball at the bottom of the league every single year. No team spends less on their roster. No team has rolled out as few designated players as the Colorado Rapids, and yet they are in the thick of it pretty much every year. They haven't won the Wooden Spoon in our time. In 2020 and 2021, they were in the playoffs. 2022 was a down year. 2016, they made a run all the way to the Western Conference Finals. This is a team that gets a lot of mileage with very little spending. And it's because the front office does some really neat work using advanced metrics and advanced scouting to find the right players. So to some degree, you might not be thrilled that Porrick Smith hasn't delivered us a trophy. I'm not thrilled that Porrick Smith hasn't delivered us a trophy, but Porrick Smith has delivered some very good, consistent results with very little money that KSE has provided him. And so he is doing a pretty good job. And I think, by the way, Matt, if he got fired tomorrow, some other team in MLS would scoop him up and make him the general manager 24 hours later, because I think he's very well respected within the league. And all you have to do to prove that is go read the Athletics front office surveys about the most underappreciated general manager in MLS. I think Porrick Smith is the reigning champ 2 years in a row.
Yeah, good point there, Mark. And I think actually there was, I think they also did a poll of what if Garth Lagerwey hadn't taken the Atlanta job, like who potentially could have been in that conversation. And regularly, like the guys at The Athletic, if allocation disorder, rest in peace, still existed, the guy they constantly talk, the three names that they constantly throw out as GM that could move within the league and then upgrade their situation from their club, Porrick's usually at or near the top of that list. Head coaches that originally regularly speculated on upgrading their position as well, just like Wilfred Nancy did this past offseason, going from Montreal, which sold a bunch of players and brought in no one, to Columbus Crew, where he's coaching them very well, is Robin Fraser. And then another name that the people who think about this constantly think about in terms of assistant GM who could get an actual GM or technical director job is Fran Taylor as well. And so one of the ways to keep all those people in place is to sign them to new contracts, give them pay raises, and then give them a new title that's reflective of the role. Porrick, Fran, Wayne, now all signed through 2026. And what had happened to Robin Fraser last year? He got a new contract. He got an extension. He probably got a bunch more money than he was getting previously. I don't know how, Mark, we have talked for like 10 minutes about this, and we have not brought up the fact that Drew Moore has been added as an elite player development coach, and I can't wait to talk to him about that as well. So good on Drew Moore, who's going to be doing some media stuff, doing some coaching stuff as well. I can think of one other person, Mark, who would be better in terms of involved in player development as a center back to breed a proper Colorado Rapids player out of the academy, and that person's name is Marcelo Balboa. I look forward to the many center backs that the two will develop for the Burgundy Boys in the years to come on homegrown NU22 deals. And then kind of the last two things that I wanted to say, Mark, is as much as fans, again, I think have right to be suspicious or be concerned, about some of the money, the financial windfalls coming through that were not that might not have been all legwork done by the club. Apple TV was secured by MLS, and the potentially getting out from under the don't block my altitude situation made it much easier for the club to get a shirt sponsorship. How much of that was Wayne Brandt working night and day, 80 hours a week for 4 years to try and actually secure UC Health? And then potentially some of that money that was maybe earned by the greater growth of the league, and then the Rapids being a small tugboat that was elevated by that, and some of the money going towards that rather than being kept on the field, to quote Jonah Hill's character from Moneyball, I think is still a valid concern. But to your point, Rabbi, they're paying out to add a whole bunch of staff who have very specific jobs so that you don't have one person having to do two or three different things, which is a constant thing, Rabbi, that you and I have heard off the record, off site, from people who work in KSE, people who work with the Rapids, possibly one to two drinks in over the number of years, that it's a small staff, everybody wears a bunch of different hats, and they're just doing the best they can with the circumstances they have. Now they have a lot more help. And between hiring a bunch of people who cost salary, benefits, and potentially relocation fees and everything, and then with the added money that they clearly spent on their three players coming in from Europe, you can clearly see the financial windfall from this past offseason being spent in a way to help make the team more competitive, albeit within the Rapids way structure, which fans are still going to complain about, and I get that. And then last thing that I want to say, Rabbi, is that the diversity of staff they have, bringing in people from Europe, bringing in other people as well, experience in MLS, experience in Denver with some of the other teams as well. You know, there's somebody on staff who had familiarity with Scandinavia, who knew of Andreas Maxschu, who was able to give just another reference to confirm that that was a player they could go after. There's somebody with experience in Portugal, whose name I don't remember, in one of these press releases as well. And so the fact that they're not just hiring other people who've been in an MLS bubble is a good experience, is a good thing. Listeners, I will link all of this stuff to all of the press releases so you can find all the details that Rabbi and I didn't want to bore you with bringing out. Pinto's the guy from Portugal, Mark, coming from Sporting Clube de Portugal, and he has a UEFA B license. That's pretty good. So I will link all of the press releases that the Rapids have put out. So if you want to be a Wednesday sicko and learn about the pyramids, then you can read that. I will link, Mark, your piece from the American Soccer Analysis, which is still up. And then if you want my more concise views on the macro, all the stuff that's happened as well, I will link my article, which was published on Burgundy Wave earlier today at time of recording. Rabbi, this coming Saturday at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, the Colorado Rapids will be playing their first ever game against St. Louis City in all caps FC. Rabbi, we are currently 7-34 through the Colorado Rapids 2023 MLS season. They sit 11th in the Western Conference, 7 points off of 8 games played, 1 win, 3 losses, and 4 ties. They have a goal difference of -5, and they are still winless at the Richard this season, 0-1-2. St. Louis City, first in the Western Conference, Rabbi, 18 points off of 8 games played, 6 wins, 2 losses, those losses being at home to Minnesota, and then at Seattle 3-0 by the transitive property. Listeners, perhaps the Colorado Rapids are not as bad as we thought, and they have a goal difference of +11. And away from City Park in St. Louis this season, they are 3-1-0. Mark, I look at St. Louis City, and I think in hindsight, we have to issue a mea culpa that we got it wrong from a roster build standpoint. Mark, they have two very effective designated players versus João Klaus. Santa Klaus, as some St. Louis City fans have been calling him, has been a very good poacher, very good at taking advantage of mistakes that are made by defenders of the opposing team. Nico Giacchini was kind of my thought of an American retread And a young player to watch. He got a goal this past weekend against FC Cincinnati in a 5-1 win. Eduard Löwen. He's got the two dots above the O, and I still don't know what to do with that in the German language. So he's there. And Jared Stroudmark has kind of been there, I think, a younger version and a less established version of what the guy who was in New England who then had a breakout season with Austin, whose name I can't remember, Diego Fagundes. Jared Stroud for St. Louis City is the Diego Fagundes for St. Louis right now. He was in with Red Bulls. He was in with Austin. I think they picked him up in the expansion draft, and he's done really good stuff on the left and a little bit in the middle as well. They've got kind of a patchwork MLS second tier mid players in defense, Mark, with the exception of Tim Parker, St. Louis native, Ginger, who's obviously been fantastic for them, and Roman Berkey, for all that was made about the cost to acquire him and his salary and everything, has been up to snuff from a goalkeeper standpoint. Mark, this is a team that is better than I think we thought. This is a team that I still thought had a competitive starting 11 at the start of the season in terms of in MLS. They do not have a lot of depth in terms of their options off the bench, which I do think will be a concern for them long term and will continue to haunt them. They continue to outperform their XG and be very, very good finishers. They also are a team that creates chaos for opponents that try to build out of the back. Those opponents, those defenders then make mistakes, and then St. Louis City does a very good job of taking advantage of those mistakes. That, for me, Rabbi, is still a little bit of fool's gold or the canary in the coal mine. That is not something that you can reliably count on happening over the course of a 34-game season. Eventually, we're just going to get more tape on this, and other coaches who play them a second or a third time are going to be able to figure out their patterns of play. And at some point, teams are going to round into form from a possession standpoint to where they don't make those dumb, simple mistakes that St. Louis City has capitalized on. I would amend my season prediction right now, Mark, in that I think this will be a top nine team in the Western Conference. I think they will make the playoffs. I previously had them as a wooden spoon contender. I still think they are relying on unsustainable blood of the innocents magic that is getting them all of these fortuitous opportunities where opponents literally look at a St. Louis player, pass it to them, and they're able to pass it into the back of the net. Santa Claus, Mark, has 5 goals and 4 assists. Eduard Löwen has 2 goals and 5 assists. If you take away all of those fortuitous opportunities, Klaus's 5 goals go down to 2 goals. Who else has 2 goals this season, Mark? I believe Michael Barrios has 2 goals for the Colorado Rapids. So take that into account. That being said, we just spent 20 minutes, Mark, talking about the game against Charlotte where the Rapids were pulled apart defensively and can make really big mistakes on the individual level and can have a breakdown of a play where 3 or 4 players make little mistakes that individually are not an issue, collectively are an issue, and lead to a very good opportunity for opponent where they score. There are aspects of this energy drink Red Bull soccer team wearing red that can take advantage of the Rapids' weaknesses that have me concerned for Saturday.
Yeah. So I'll just quote a few things, Matt. You covered it really, really well. The team has 18 goals, okay? Matt, how much does expected goals think that they should have produced based on the shots they've taken?
I did not look this up, Rabbi.
Wild guess. Take a guess.
I'm going to say 12.
Ooh, you are so good at this. I hate when you do that. 11.5. So they have outproduced, well done, Matt. They have outproduced their expected goals in every single match they've played except the 2 losses, right? In the 2 losses, they produced 0.9 and 0.6 expected goals, and they scored 0 goals. So there's something amiss. There's something strange. Now, they've actually outproduced their opponent in expected goals in 1, 2, 3, 4 of those matches, 5 of those matches, actually. So, but still, they've been wildly overproducing. Like, for instance, in their last match they played against FC Cincinnati, they scored 5 goals on 1.5 expected goals, right? So that's, they're outproducing in a huge way. To that end, Matt, Klaus, João Klaus, the Brazilian striker that they have on their team, has been, like, his numbers are through the roof. If you look at his FB ref percentiles, they're all in the 90s, right? And the most shocking one for me is that he's produced 0.26 assists per 90, which is a lot. That's a really high number. It puts him in the 96th percentile. That's his raw production of assists. His expected assist number is 0.07, which would put him in the 20th percentile, right? In other words, the math says he doesn't make such compelling passes. But what happens is the guys score on passes that he makes, right? So they're just overperforming expectation to a ridiculous degree. It's just a really, really talented and overperforming team. Matt, go ahead and say something.
Yeah, so the question I would ask Mark, as someone who looks at these numbers more than I do, so his actuals make him look like Thiago Almada, Sebastian Giovinco. His actuals in terms of his numbers right now, if we project that out for a 34-game season, are MLS MVP candidate. His expected situation is an above average number 10 in MLS.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Yep. Basically, I mean, right now he's on 8 games and he's got 5 goals and 2 assists. And if you extrapolate that out through a whole season, we're looking at a dude who's going to finish with like 24 goals and 12 assists. And that's not sustainable. That's not likely to continue happening. But maybe it does, but probably not. This is why, by the way, when Matt said mea culpa, we're all wrong, Matt and I are both happy to say we're wrong. We got it wrong. Just like every other pundit in MLS, we all picked this team to be 14th, and they're not going to be. I think Matt is probably all in to say, I won't put my words in your mouth, Matt. So I will say, though, that when this team sinks down to 7th or 8th, by the end of the season, I won't be surprised at all, right? That's where I think that they will probably be. They're still a good team, but and to that end, the other thing I'll say to kind of wrap things up is, you know, I've watched individual players on this team mostly in past years. I like what they constructed as a team. I think that they have a lot of really good players. Tom Bogert wrote a really great tweet about them a couple days ago where he pointed out how everyone on the team was acquired. Let's see, Alm came on a free transfer, Vasilev and Gioacchini came. Gioacchini, is that how you pronounce it, Matt?
Gioacchini,
okay, came via expansion draft. Nerwinski, Nelson came on expansion draft, he's their left back. Joe Nerwinski came as a free agent. Roman Berkey came as a free agent. Hybert, their center back, came as a free agent, right? Parker came on 500K of GAM. This was Distress Assets FC 2.0, right? This is a team full of players that were kind of misfits and cast-offs that nobody wanted. Klaus is the exception to that, and Lewin is the exception to that. Those two players, they paid good money to get those guys, and I think a lot of people were like, well, that's pretty cool, but they're filling the rest of the island out with misfit toys. None of these guys is particularly exciting. That being said, two of the misfit toys they picked, Jared Stroud and Jacob Nerwinski, I like very much, and I liked them when they made those moves. But all I did was look at this roster and say, there's 7 guys on the starting roster I've never heard of. There's 2 guys who are coming from legit Bundesliga teams. There's 2 guys who I like who are coming from inside MLS. This isn't a good enough team. And boy, were we wrong. The thing is, Matt, I can tell you about this team, I think, the same way you can. From players we've seen in MLS who played last year, and from highlights that we've watched this year, I don't think I've sat down and watched an entire 45 minutes of St. Louis just by themselves. So I don't really know what this team looks like. Unlike every other team in MLS, this will be my first look. So I'm excited to see what this team has to bring. I do think that the Rapids will probably struggle in this game because it's not all smoke and mirrors. And like we said before, the Rapids haven't matched up well against good teams. They've played down to the level of the bad teams too. And they're suffering with a few injuries. So if you don't have Cole Bassett, and if you don't have Andreas Maxu, along with all the other players who are out, you're a little thin, and so that gives me worries. That means I predict that the Rapids will lose this game 2-1. Matt, any final thoughts and predictions on St. Louis?
Yeah, first thing, Mark, I have to mention, as an as someone with an environmental engineering bachelor's degree from the University of Miami in Florida, I have to say that Saturday, April 22nd, is Earth Day, and it is also Sustainability Night for the Colorado Rapids. And Mark, the Rapids will be wearing the darker of the two iterations of the Parlay kits that are made from recycled ocean plastic, I believe, giving me real like San Jose Sharks vibes with the color scheme. Mark, with the you have the dark black and then kind of the teal accents on one and the more tealish one as well. So the Rapids will not be in burgundy. They'll be in the darker of the two, and then it'll be more of a navy, brighter blue than more of the off blue that complements the city reddish pink that apparently none of the St. Louisians can actually agree whether it's red or pink. And maybe that was the point behind the club choosing that color. So I'm excited for that, Mark. I'm excited for sustainability. And obviously, I'm going to go out, be in nature on Sunday, and leave me alone. Don't talk to me. I'm in the mountains and trying to save the world. To your point, Rabbi, my biggest concern about this isn't necessarily any of the individuals that we've highlighted. It's that this is a team that finishes that overfinishes their chances. Like, they're what I think the New York Red Bulls actually want to be from a structure standpoint. One, because they actually have DPs. Two, they actually perform their XG. And three, they're just chaos. They've got 11 chaos merchants out there, or 10. I don't know that a goalkeeper can be a chaos merchant. Maybe Emiliano Martinez for Argentina and Aston Villa. Maybe he's a chaos merchant. But and how do the Rapids deal with that? When we've seen games against New York Red Bulls are normally total chaos, and the Rapids either elevate themselves within that chaos, but they rarely control the game. When the Rapids have played teams that play Red Bull energy drink soccer, and recently, Mark, that's been mostly not Sporting Kansas City, Philadelphia Union and New York Red Bulls, the Rapids have to adjust to the opponent playing their game. The opponent dictates how the game goes. I don't know how the Rapids ultimately grapple with that. Normally, I would say, Mark, oh, expansion team. They haven't played at altitude and everything. They'll come here and they'll be gassed in the 70th minute. They smacked RSL up the side a few weeks ago, folks, and RSL was coming off of their bye week. So that's how this team is able to deal with that. Whether they're able to do that at 5,200 like they were at, what, 37-something, I think, that Rio Tinto is at, I think it's a valid question. But how do the Rapids deal with, given the struggles that the team still has in terms of defensive breakdowns and then winning the ball and then transitioning, having the ball in an uncomfortable situation to a comfortable building out of the back setup or getting in transition on the opponent and not making a horrible mistake that then makes Danny Wilson look like a golden cone, or where just people are going to dunk on you, or people are going to again ask if MLS is rigged and the Rapids are in on the conspiracy theory of passing the ball straight to the opponent so that they can score an easy goal. I guess, Mark, it's beneficial that there's no former Rapids on the St. Louis team, that Jared Stroud can somehow try and punk Keegan Rosenberry thinking that he's a teammate like he did in Austin as well. But if the Rapids can deal with that decently well and not give anything easy to St. Louis, I think they can do something with it. I think there's enough film out on St. Louis to where the Rapids are going to have a better idea of who St. Louis is than teams that played them in the first couple weeks of the season. I think this is going to be another draw, Mark, for me. I'm going to go 2-2 in this one. I think the Rapids are finding their offense. I think the St. Louis defense can be had in transition. I don't know that the Rapids defense, especially if Max Schuh isn't back, are going to be able to structurally handle what St. Louis is doing right now. If Max Schuh was back and you had Jack Price in there, I wouldn't put money on the Rapids getting a clean sheet, Mark, but I think it's more likely the Rapids get a clean sheet than they give up two or more goals.
It would be historic if it was a draw. You know why, Matthew?
Because St. Louis City has not drawn a game yet.
That's correct. It would be the first draw in St. Louis history. That's the kind of dorky thing that stat people come up with years down the road.
All right, Rabbi, let's get out of here. Listeners, you can follow us collectively on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at @LWSMattPollard, and at @Rapids96Podcast. Check out all of our work, Rapids related or otherwise, at Pittsburgh Soccer Now, BurgundyWave.com, LastWordOnSports.com/soccer, and the aforementioned Substack, HoldingTheHighline.substack.com. The best way to support the podcast is to take out a paid subscription to our Substack that supports the podcast, that supports the website, that supports what Rabbi is doing with the Substack, and it might allow us to come up with merch or, you know, get Mark a new camera and all the other nice things as well. If you want to get in touch with us, social media is the best way to do that. We've got open DMs on the Twitter account, and you can also tag us or use the hashtag AskHCHL with your questions, and we'll answer them on Twitter or potentially on the podcast. If you've got a question that's a little bit more nuanced, is going to take longer than 280 characters, or you don't have the authority to use Twitter notes because Elon changed something in the last 5 minutes, then you can get at us at our email address, rapids96podcast@gmail.com. Listeners, we'll see you next week after the Rapids absolutely spank St. Louis City 5-0.
La Paz!